Everyone said nice. How are we all doing today? Good? Are you all ready for another episode of... Episode of what? Another episode of A Touch of Reality. Reality. To have lived for so many years of our lives in a make-believe world in which we thought was reality, but then to realize that that was all just a fabrication of our own minds. You know, it's funny, isn't it? Like, it's taken us so long in our lives to actually come to terms with what's really going on with us, with our lives. For all the years we might have spent at school and then at university and then various other study and educational programs and whatnot. Many of you might have been educated in other parts of the world, not just in Sri Lanka. But nowhere you went did you actually come across, encounter what was really going on. It was all a tall tale. Behind all of that, Mother Nature was doing its thing, or doing her thing, but behind, we had a veil of ignorance in front of all of that, and we were covered by the mist and the fog of ignorance. So we interpreted the world not as it really was, but based on our own interpretations of the world. And the price we had to pay for that was that we suffered, no less. It is true that each and every one of us in this room have suffered countless times, endlessly. Suffering is like our best friend now, isn't it? I sometimes remind people, you know, when everyone else has abandoned you, they're still suffering. The one thing that doesn't abandon you, ever. Particularly when everyone else has abandoned you, how do people feel? Abandoned. They feel lonely. And that is one version of suffering, isn't it? So when everyone else has abandoned you, suffering is still there by your bedside. So much so that people have, I think over the years, people have try to teach themselves, convince themselves that it is just part and parcel of life. There's not really anything we can do to be entirely free of it. We just have to come to terms with it and learn to live with it. Like as you do after 5 or 10 years of marriage. Not really much you can do about it, you just have to come to terms with it. But it has come to that point in many people, it does come to that point after a first, you know, after the first few years of one's life. I think maybe when we are still very young, we feel very hopeful that somehow suffering can come to an end, a day that we don't have to cry, no demons behind the closets, no dark days or fearful days. We feel that those days will be over. That day is just around the corner, but I think it's come to a point where people believe that maturity is the point where you realize that suffering is just going to be there for the rest of your life, and you just have to accept that, and it's how gracefully you learn to accept suffering. People are going to betray you. People are going to lie to you. You're going to be heartbroken one day or the other. And then someone you love is going to depart, and sometimes depart for good. And then these experiences, people believe, mature them. But really, in the sasana, the Buddha's version of maturity is not to really come to terms with suffering, but really to understand it and then to eradicate it. But unless you realize that suffering is actually conditioned, it is a product of causes. And until you realize that those causes are all within your own power to do something about, there's nothing you can do about suffering. So that's why I believe that everyone one day ends their journey in this asana, either today, tomorrow, or someday in the future, the day that people realize that suffering is conditioned, it is not some other divine entity or some other ungodly power that bestows suffering upon you, it's not someone else that injects it into you, it's not anyone else who's responsible for it, you create your own suffering, you're doing it right now, if ignorance and attachment are in your mind. The day you realize that, ladies and gentlemen, is a huge day for you. It's the day that your life turns upside down. Or at least the right side up. I think that day has come to many of you. And that is what has kept you coming time and time again. You know that here we take a no-nonsense approach to life. This is not about anything else other than Nibbana. We are not here to praise each other or sing glory about each other. This is not a hymn sheet that we have to boast about each other or whatever. It's not about that. Swami Mahansi talks about how good you are because you are good, not because he wants anything out of it, not because he expects anything out of you. And you talk about each other, and you talk about how each other, you have been helped and you help each other. And that's the truth, because you have begun to understand what noble association is, as you're giving it and so you're getting it. So this is a really no-nonsense approach to Nibbana. I guarantee that if you invest yourself wholeheartedly into this venture, this will be the one thing that will actually have made sense. The one thing in your life that will actually have made sense, ladies and gentlemen. And I say that hand on heart and with all honesty. There will be a day in your life where you will look back at the life you have lived. It may be now, it may be a few years from now, it may be when you're on your deathbed. The inevitable opportunity for all of us to look back at our lives, and as your life flashes back in front of your very eyes and you count all the ups and the downs and the eventful moments and the milestones and the cornerstones that you have passed along the way, hopefully, and I truly mean this, hopefully, if you invest yourself genuinely into what we are doing here, as much as I do, I invest myself into what we're doing here. If you invest yourself genuinely, as much as I do, there will be a day in your life where you will realize that there was one thing that I did in my life that was right, that was effective, that was productive, and that actually made my life having worth lived. And that day just might be the day that you decided to come along to these sermons in Rajagiri. That's not because I'm the bee's knees. It's not because of that. It's because here you would have discovered the Buddha's teachings. It is here you would have discovered the universal truths. What's really going on with your lives? You are the evidence that something's happening within you. The fact that you keep coming back. Otherwise, what else is there for you to gain from here? The fact that you keep coming back is the evidence that something's happening within you and you have discovered something here. Don't you all agree with me? That transformation that's happening within you, the way that you're finding peace within you, I don't teach you how to change the world out there. I don't teach you how to settle scores. I don't teach you how to go and change other people. That's not what we teach. That's not what we learn here. What we learn here is how do we remain equanimous no matter whatever goes on out there, and how everyone's behavior towards us is like a mirror of our own behavior towards them. If you want to know what you do to other people, just observe what others do to you. That's exactly what you're doing to them. If not today, yesterday. Recently, at the monastery, Swami Nuhansa came up to me and he asked me a very interesting question. He said, Swami Nuhansa, I'm okay when people If either a teacher or someone else accuses me of something bad that I've done, but I don't like it when someone accuses me of something that I haven't done. False accusations. I really struggle with that. So one of our young novice monks, he walked up to me and said, what can I do about it? I said, every time you hear one of these false accusations, ask yourself why you did the same to others in the past. Start there. That's not Nibbana, because there's no you, there's no I in Nibbana. But at least to begin with, to practice a bit of patience before you realize that contemplation is what's next. Initially, at the very first instance, remind yourself that this is what I would have done to others along the way. And that's a really good start of a 10 for people here. If you are the victims of false accusations, when you are on the receiving end of one of those, ask yourself the same question. Why? Not why he to me or she to me. Why me to them? Sometimes I'm really surprised as to the things that I'd done in my previous lives. I sometimes ask myself, did I really do such a thing? When you start to understand karma and vipaka, and you really begin to comprehend that that's how your life is dictated, that is the fuel of your life, your karmic energy. And your karmic energy is the product of your own doing. Once you realize that, many a day will pass before your very eyes, ladies and gentlemen, you will ask yourself this question, geez, I did that? I spoke like that to people? How rude of me, not how rude of her. Because life is a boomerang. Everything that comes around is something that you threw around. That's a very good place to start. It's not the end. It's not the end, because there's no you that did it or I that receives it. Yeah? But that's the finale. But at the beginning, it's a very good place to start to come to a comprehension and understanding that karma and vipaka is what orchestrates everything that goes on in the universe. Certainly, the thoughts that you have, the things that happen to you, that's all driven by karma and vipaka. Your environment has a big part to play, the environment in which you are. There have been days where I take my alms bowl and I go out on alms, and all I get sometimes is a couple of biscuits. There have been days like that. But if I did the same alms round here at Rajagiri, a couple of biscuits will fall from the top. After you have filled it to the brim, I will have to catch those couple of biscuits and put it in my pocket. So it's not that I don't have the vipaka to receive alms. The environment has a part to play as well. So it's your vipaka energy and the environment. These two things combined creates the product. I'll explain to it in a moment and I'll put it on the board. But before I forget, of course, let's all bring our palms together in veneration of the great master, whose teachings we so proudly share with each other today. He is the fount of wisdom, the fount of all knowledge, the all-knowing one, the all-seeing one, the omniscient one, the unvanquished one, the undefeated one. He who has shown us the path to our own liberation, to our own freedom. Let us take this moment to make our veneration to His holy name. But as we do so, let us also remind ourselves that this is not a mere veneration, but a pledge of allegiance to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, to the journey that we have to take to get there, and the path on which we tread. As we chant the Namaskara, let us make a resolve that we will forever remain students on this noble path until the end of all suffering. Let us do that, observe the precepts, and continue with today's proceedings.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
You know, just a thought just occurred to me as I was precepting you. Shall I share it with you? You asked for it. I asked you and you said yes. When you observe the five precepts, I can hear the reason why, besides obligations, duties and responsibilities, so we must always leave that to a side. Can you hear me okay? I have a bit of a sore throat today, so if I don't sound the usual melodious, mellifluous, then please forgive me. In the five precepts, when you observe the five precepts, I can hear the reason, besides duties, responsibilities and obligations, why you still wish to remain in a lay life. Let me repeat that. Besides duties, so I'll always leave 1% for that. Duties, responsibilities and obligations. Either you towards your children, spouses, your employees, workplace, whatever, right? Whatever. It'll be far too numerous for me to spell them all out to you. So whatever those reasons are, besides that, in the five precepts, as you recite them, I can hear the reason why you wish to remain in a lay life. Which precept do you think it is of the five? Let's take the first one. Panatipata veramanisikkhapada samadhiya. Is it that in your lay life, you like to remain in a lay life so that you can go on a killing spree? Whenever you feel like killing someone, you can do that. You can just keep on swatting mosquitoes and killing flies and you just like doing that. Is that why? No, certainly not. That's not the reason. In fact, if you were to take the 8 precepts or the 10 precepts when you become a samanera, or as we do at the monastery, the anagarikas and the anagarikas, and when you come to the monastery for one of these retreats, you get the 10 precepts, right? You have the same panadipata, no difference there. Is it that, let's go to the second precept then, to abstain from theft. Do you think you remain in a lay life so that you can just keep on nicking whatever you like? When you see something, you know, that's like you're a kleptomaniac. These words, they come from something. You're a habitual thief and so you just like to keep stealing things, taking things that belong to other people without their consent. Is that something you like to do? No, that's not why you wish to remain in a lay life. Now we're on the third one. What's the third one? Kamesu micchachara. Not kamesu micchachara, that's wrong. It's not kamesu micchachara. It's kamesu micchachara. That's how you should pronounce it. Otherwise the whole meaning is distorted. Kamesu is in sensuality. Su, let's call it the suffix. The suffix su indicates in something, in it, Right? So, kamesu michachara. Michachara is misconduct. Kamesu michachara veramani. When you take the 8 precepts, there's a difference in that precept. Or the 10 precepts, there's a variation there. It's not kamesu michachara. What is it? Indeed. Abrahmacharya veramani sikkhapadam samadhyam. What about the next one? What is it? Musavada. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhyam. When you take the 8 precepts or the 10 precepts, it's the same precept. No difference there either. And the next one? The one that lets you drink a little bit? Take a little once in a while? Huh? As long as it's a shot glass, it's all right, right? Just not those beakers. Suramere Majjapama Dattana Veramani. So you have the same precept in the 8 precepts as well as in the 10 precepts. So you see, there's only one precept difference. Which one is it? The third precept. Kamesu Michachara Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhyam. Whereas if you took sil, observed sil, or wish to enter the noble life as a samanera, an anagarika or an anagarika, you would give up kamesu michachara and you would take up abrahmacharya veramani sikkhapadam samadhyami. I propose to this intelligent audience, I propose to this noble and intelligent audience that that precept, the freedom to observe kamesu michachara, that precept, and therefore to engage in kamesu, I don't know what the good version of that is, maybe sammachara, I don't know. So not sensual misconduct, but sensual, what's the opposite of misconduct? Good conduct? Conduct in sensuality, just not in the bad way. Misconduct, right? You wish to have the freedom, the liberty to indulge, engage in sensual conduct. Because that is not permitted when you take the 8 precepts. Abrahmacharya Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhyami means I refrain from a livelihood that is not keeping in line with the Noble Eightfold Path. I'm opening up an avenue for you to understand who you are, why you do what you do, and where your practice will take you. See, abrahmacharya, when you put the letter A in front of another word, it becomes the opposite of that. Yeah? So that's the Pali. Also applies in Sinhalese as well. So then if abrahmacharya veramani, veramani is to refrain, then what is that which you adhere to? Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya or brahmacharya is the Noble Eightfold Path. When you hear the Swaminarayanas take arms, well, you don't hear them taking arms, but just before, they chant this little thing, don't they? Called the Pratyaksha. When you're at the monastery, you would have heard Swaminarayanas do that. Have you heard them? Just listen to what they say. Perhaps you do it as well when you observe precepts, or observe sil. I'll repeat it to you. Patisankha yoniso pindapatam patisevami neva davaya namadaya namandanaya navibhusanaya yava deva imassa kayassa titiya, don't worry about this, yapanaya vihinsuparatiya brahmacharyam anugahaya. Just focus on that part, forget the rest of it. One day I'll explain to you what the whole thing means. And then once you really understand the gravity of that, that is actually a kammasthana. People think that it's just a pratyaksha that you have to chant before taking arms. Not so, ladies and gentlemen. It's a kammasthana. It's an object of meditation. The meditation that you ought to do as you take your meals is the pratyaksha, the reflection, if you like. They're called reflections, the four reflections that as monks or people who live a noble life, we must do, and that's what the Buddha has advised. But what I want to draw your attention is to that part in this food pratyaksha, or the reflection that we contemplate before we take our meals. Have you heard this? Have you heard the Swaminosis do that at the monastery? Perhaps even in other places, those monks tend to repeat that together, right? So, patisankayoniso pindapatam patisevami neva davaya namadaya namandanaya navibhusanaya yavadeva imasakaya satitiya yapanaya vihingsuparatiya brahmacharyam anugrahaya. Anugrahaya is to contribute. Anugrahaya. To contribute towards what? Brahmacharya. So then, that tells you why we take a meal. So why does a monk take his meal? Brahmacharya, anugrahaya. Because the energy that you get from a meal contributes towards your practice of the noble eightfold path. That's what brahmacharya is. Now then, come back to the five precepts that you observe. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyam. And what do we do? Agbrahmacharya veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyam. Do you see that there's a world of a difference between the two? The precept that you observe as a lay individual, and I'm not saying this is bad or wrong, I just want to point out something to you. It's the truth. It's like pointing at the moon and saying that's the moon, and the sun and saying that's the sun. It's not right or wrong, it's just fact. And I want you to reflect on this. Because you're all here and you tell me, Swaminas, we want to get to Nibbana. Yes or no? Do you all want to get to Nibbana? Then it's my duty, is it not, to hold your hand as much as I can and to take you one step at a time to Nibbana. Some of you will keep small steps, baby steps. Some of you keep large steps, big steps, elephant steps. Some walk two steps forward and one step back. Some walk two steps forward and three steps back. But overall, over time, right, over time, as we grow and as we learn, as we grow in wisdom, overall, I believe that, like I said at the beginning, when you look back at your life and your life flashes in front of your eyes, they say it tends to happen towards the last few hours, moments of your life flashes in front of you. I believe that these programs, these sermons that you've been coming along to, the practice that you have been doing here, will only prove to be the most productive, effective, useful, and most conducive thing that you would have ever done to get you to true happiness in life. I truly believe in that. That is the sentiment with which I apply myself to these talks. So if you tell me, Swaminasa, it is Nibbana that we want to get to, please guide us. Please don't let us rest on our laurels. We have become so used to living the mundane life, right? And looking at the world in a very mundane way, looking at the world in ways that our associations with friends, family, the world around us have always tried to instill into us, and we today realize that that worldview is wrong. So please show us the way that the Buddha would have seen the world. As you ask me for that, I have to explain to you that this is the truth. So look at the difference between the precept that you observe and the precepts that we observe. Kamesu micchachara veramani, agbrahmacharya veramani. Brahmacharya is the Noble Eightfold Path. So the precept that I observe is that I refrain from doing anything that is not in line with the Noble Eightfold Path. Because it is only the Noble Eightfold Path that takes me to Nibbana. The precept that a lay individual would observe is kamesu michachara. So you see, you have given yourself a bit of leeway. You've given yourself a little bit of leeway. What is that? I don't engage in misconduct. I don't engage in misconduct, but please don't take all of it away. Do you agree with me or not? Sometimes the truth can be a little bit harsh. But if you're here for the truth, then I shall speak the truth. Kamesu michachara? No, I won't do that. But kamesu chara? Oh yes. Please don't take that away from me. Now take a moment and think about what do you mean by this kamesu chara? Engaging in sensuality, just not the misconduct part. Now, if I ask you what is this misconduct, I'm sure you'll tell me all sorts of things. You'll say, Swami, no answer. It's when we indulge our five senses in ungodly, unwholesome ways. That's wrong, right? To be with another person's other half is a really bad thing to do. For whatever reason, that's bad, and I don't engage in such acts. Until I'm married or until I have consent, until I have permission from those who I need to seek permission from, I will not engage in such behavior, such conduct, and I want to refrain from that. And that is the way in which I train myself. Good. But the thing is this, you keep yourself some leeway, or keep for yourself some leeway to engage in sensuality. Now, here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. Do you agree with me or not that Nibbana and sensuality are 180 degrees apart from each other? In the Noble Eightfold Path, you start with Sammaditti. The next rung down the ladder is Sammasankappa. Okay? Right thoughts. Sammasankappa is threefold. Avyapada Sankappa, Avihinsa Sankappa, and Nekkhamma Sankappa. What do you think Nekkhamma is? Nekkhamma is abstinence from sensuality. To cultivate thoughts that are free of karma is Nekkhamma. Karma is sensuality. So you have karma to do with sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. All of that is karma. So for instance, do you think someone who observes the five precepts would think it wrong for them to enjoy in a slice of cake? Do you think it's wrong? So you observe the five precepts, right? And then you dig yourself into a nice pudding, let's say. And as you take bites of it, you talk about how nice it is, it's delectable, it's delicious, isn't it? And you talk with each other, like you go to a high tea, these things called high teas. So you go there and you go with someone, your friends, your whoever, family, and they're not filling, right? They're there to enjoy. That's what they're there for, because they give you like these little bite-sized biscuits and little cakes and sandwiches and things like that. Right? It's just a teaser. You don't go there to have a hearty meal, not to a high tea. For that you might go to a buffet or something. You go there because you want to have a bit of a chin wag, a bit of a chit-chat. And as you do that, you want to engage in pleasing your senses. So someone who observes the five precepts with kamesu michachara veramani, and then they go and take part, or they go to one of these high tea things. Do you think that's wrong? I don't mean in relation to Nibbana. I mean in relation to the precept that they have observed, do you think it is wrong for them to do so? No, it's not. It's not. Because that is the freedom, the liberty, the leeway that you have left for yourselves. Because you might come to the temple, you might sit at home, observe the five precepts, but when you walk into the kitchen, there's a fridge waiting to serve you. As you open it and you see all those soft drinks and the puddings and the biscuits and the cakes and all that in there, and you open the freezer and you see your little nice little ice cream tub in there, right? Abrahmacharya, I'm out the window. But if you observe the eight precepts, let's just take the eight precepts, forget the 10 precepts for a second. If you observe the eight precepts, in the eight precepts, you take on the practice of Abrahmacharya Veramani. Brahmacharya is the Noble Eightfold Path. The second thing on the Noble Eightfold Path is Sammaditti Samma Sankappa. Samma Sankappa, like I said, is threefold: Avyapada Sankappa, Avihinsa Sankappa, and Nekkamma Sankappa. In other words, whenever thoughts of sensuality arise in your mind, your practice should be, if you are someone who has observed the eight precepts or the 10 precepts, at the very least, because up next is Upasampada, high ordination. If you're someone who has observed those precepts, whenever you experience a moment of sensuality, not bad misconduct, I'm not talking about that, moment of sensuality, your practice should be, ladies and gentlemen, to contemplate on the fact that sensuality is a mere fabrication of the mind and it is only a product of ignorance and attachment. That is the practice to which you have promised yourself. So then, you cannot dig into a cake or a pudding or an ice cream tub, because you'll have to ask yourself, why am I taking this? Is it for nourishment or is it to indulge my senses? If it's to indulge your senses, then it is not something you can do. Not something that you're not supposed to do. I mean, no one's going to come and give you a parking ticket. It's not against the law. It's not against the law. No one's going to come to punish you because you break a precept. You are punishing yourself. No one's going to come and punish you. No one's going to come and condemn you. What is the punishment you give yourself when you indulge in sensuality? Give it to me in one word. What is the punishment you give yourself when you indulge in sensuality? In other words, what do I mean by sensuality here? Enjoying a slice of cake, something as harmless, something so innocent. I mean, you bought it. You didn't even steal it. You bought it with your hard-earned money, which you earned by doing only rightful employment. Okay? But now you are at home and you're digging yourself into that slice of cake. What is the harm you do to yourself? What is the punishment that you give yourself in one word as you dig yourself into that? Give it to me in one word. It starts with S and ends with A. Sang? Sang? Sara. Sansara. I'm sorry. Do you want the truth? Do you really want the truth? Or we can talk about Jack and the Beanstalk. Can I ask you to do one thing for me? Put your mind to my heart and try and read the intention with which I speak to you like this. Why it is I share these truths with you when I know that I'm asking you to do something almost impossible. I know. What I'm asking you to do is something almost impossible. I'm asking a group of people who live a lay life, I'm asking them, why do you indulge yourself in a slice of cake, something so innocent, something so harmless? How could it be wrong to do that? How could it be so terrible to do that? Well, the truth is, no one's going to punish you. No one's going to condemn you because no one needs to. You do it yourself. When you eat that cake, you think that deliciousness is in the cake. You think that lovely taste is in the cake. So the cake is an object in the outside world. I'm trying to show you, I'm trying to connect the dots for you to help you realize why doing that takes you in samsara. Okay? So when you think that the cake is the object which has given you that satisfaction, that enjoyment, the cake is an object in the outside world. To engage with the outside world, your mind cannot do that directly, so it needs a body. Because the mind is only a mental energy, it's not a physical energy. But to engage with something physical, you need a physical object. So two things can come into contact. So then, when the mind believes that the cake is what gave me that delight, that pleasure, now the mind will require a physical body to interact with that object. Then tell me, what escape do you have from the sensual world? What escape do you have from the sensual world? Above the sensual world, you have the rupa worlds. Above the rupa worlds, you have the arupa worlds. Nibbana is on the other side of that. It's not a world. It's non-existence. The four great hells are also part of the sensual world. The six heavens, the human world, and the four great hells. You are slap bang in the middle. On this side you have the six heavens, on the other side you have the four great hells, and you are now in the middle. Because typically, ladies and gentlemen, the human realm is where most people decide which way they go. This way or that way. Because once you're in the four great hells, there's no escape anyway. Once you're in the heavens, you don't feel the need to escape it because it's just luxury, enjoyment, bliss. That doesn't mean that's Nibbana. But the hardship of life, the vicissitudes of life that you experience, old age, sickness, disease, these things don't bother you. Hunger doesn't bother you. Whatever you wish is created in front of you. That is the power of your merits. So it's like going on holiday. When you go on holiday, you spend what you have earned. It's like going on holiday, going to the heavens. Where are you now? In the human world. So the four great hells are also part of the sensual world package. Meaning, you still haven't escaped the sensual world. You're only one bus stop away from the four great hells. Next stop is the four great hells. And you dig into that cake. I sometimes tell myself that it's very unfair for me to be saying such things to you. It's wrong. Not wrong, but maybe even unfair. How can I expect you to give up your cakes? How can I expect you to give up your puddings? You have your birthday coming around the corner, right? The anniversary? What do you do on a Friday? Friends get together? Colleagues get together? You got to celebrate the end of the week. So you have to eat, dance, sing, enjoy, watch a movie, put your feet up and just relax. Indulge in a bit of sensuality. All the while you're punishing yourself. You're putting down the anchors of. You're putting down an anchor into the karma worlds. That's why I ask you, please do try to understand the sentiment that I have, the intention with which I'm trying to share this with you. Folks, I need you to step up from where you are. I'm not suggesting that you must all give up your lay lives right now and come with me back to the monastery. That's not what I'm saying. But I can see in front of me people who have been given once in a sansara time, maybe opportunity, to decide what's going to happen to you after this life. Remember, on the other side of the human world, you cannot decide what happens to you. On this side of the human world, you don't have a need to decide that because you think that life is jolly good. Life is good. There's no poverty in the heavens. No civil unrest. No such things. Life is jolly good there. But all very short-lived. Now you have been presented with an opportunity to decide to choose what's going to happen to you for the next many eons. And in that opportunity that you have, don't you think it's a real pity if you choose to spend that time eating a slice of cake, enjoying an ice cream? Indulging in a bit of pudding? Once again, every time your mind is convinced that enjoyment, happiness, pleasure lay in the outside world objects, in this sensual world, you will have to return to this sensual world. It's not going to be your choosing. You cannot choose that. It's all cause and effect. When the mind is attached to such experiences, and those experiences are to be experienced physically, now you need a physical instrument with which you can engage with them, because your mind can't experience them on its own. So you need a tongue. Your tongue is not magic, it's logic. You ask for it, so now you have it. And neither are your eyes or your nose. All your five senses were ordered. They have been supplied to an order. But unfortunately, they didn't come on their own. A skull had to be formed into which your eye socket, your ears, your nose, your tongue all had to be fit. But along with that came a head that aches, and now you have headaches. And to sustain all that, the rest of the body was essential. Now you have a kidney. Did you ask for a kidney? Your mind didn't want a kidney. Your mind didn't want a liver. I mean, when did you realize you actually had kidneys? Either you learned about them at school, or something went wrong with one of them, and then you got a scan done, and you realized you had kidneys. Perhaps the same went with your liver. Most people don't even know they have a liver, or an appendix, for that matter. Those are, what do you call them, vestibular organs. You don't even know they exist until something goes wrong with them. But if any of you have had an appendectomy, and therefore have had suffered the pain of a blown up appendix, then you know that the pain of it was just excruciating. And so they had to rush you to the hospital, because if they didn't cut you up in the right time, then the sac would have burst inside your body and that would have been fatal. But you never asked for an appendix. You never asked for a liver. You never asked for a gallbladder. You never asked for any of these things. But what you asked for was a way for the mind to interact with sight, sound, smell, taste and touch. Gifts of the sensual world. Your mind was so vexed. Now this will connect you back to necessity. Nothing comes into being unless there's a necessity that precedes it. Where there's a necessity, the mind goes into vexation. And then the mind does what we call karma. If you want to understand what karma is, you can understand it in this way. This is one interpretation of karma, one definition of karma. The activity the mind engages in to relieve itself of vexation is karma. The action that a mind takes to relieve itself of vexation is karma. So when the mind has a necessity, now there's a vexation. I need. When you need something, it has to be fulfilled, right? Until it's fulfilled, you vex. This is what happens to the mind. The mind vexes. So when the mind vexes, because it needs to enjoy and experience sight, sound, smell, taste, particularly those three things, smell, taste, and touch, these are the most dangerous of all of the five. Sight and sound, not so bad, because sight and sound you can also get up in the rupa worlds. In the rupa or brahma worlds, you can still get sight and sound. But if you want to experience smell, taste and touch, you have to come down to the sensual world. The greatest irony of all of this is that smell, taste and touch don't really exist. They don't really exist in the outside world. Smell, taste and touch don't really exist. Did you know that smell, taste and touch, all three of them, are the mind's interpretation of two objects coming into contact with each other? Do you know what a rose smells like? This. Do you know what chocolate tastes like? This. You don't believe me? If you've studied anything about how the tongue works, the science, or how the nose works, how your sense of touch works, you will have learned that all there are complementary shapes that slot into each other. So when your tongue tastes sweetness, what happens is there's a sweet receptor. Actually, it's not a sweet receptor, it's a shape receptor. That's why for chemistry, you learn how molecules have certain shapes. There's a molecular geometry. And then your tongue has receptors that are complementary to those shapes. So when you have a receptor like this and a shape like that, they slot nicely into each other. Perhaps if this is sugar, then maybe this is sour. So this one doesn't slot. You need to find a receptor that's like this, and that does slot. That's how you taste sour. Bitter is probably like this, and you need something that fits into that like this. These are all different shapes. So if they're all different shapes, what is your brain doing with your mind at the back, behind the scenes? Translating these physical contact points into sensations. Don't you see that this is madness? Your brain interfaces with your mind and it translates these physical contacts, these into various sensations that you interpret as taste. So actually you can draw sweetness. You can draw sweetness. Don't draw as in extract. You can actually draw, you can illustrate sweetness. See? That is sweetness. You can illustrate sourness. See? That's the shape of sourness. Because sourness is a shape. That's all that happens in the outside world. But do you see, because the mind didn't understand any of this. The mind thought that these tastes actually exist in the outside world. It's there in a slice of cake. It's there in a sausage. It's there in a pizza. It's there in bacon. It's there in a bit of cheese. It's there in a wine of glass. Wine of glass? Glass of wine. Sounds like I just had one. It's there in a glass of wine. When the mind believes that it's there, it's out there, now the mind needs receptors to take them, to receive them. So what does the mind do? It goes into vexation and then it starts to do karma. As a result of that karma, energy is released into this universe, and that energy manifests themselves as your physical bodies. So your mind created your body. To perceive things that don't really exist. When are you going to wake up from this dream? That's why I say, the difference between you remaining in a lay life, other than for the reason that you have obligations, duties and responsibilities towards others. Okay? Other than that, the reason you remain in a lay life is because you want to keep for yourself the liberty to engage in sensuality, but alas, it doesn't even exist. It doesn't even exist. Because when you have abrahmacharya veramani sikkhapadam samadhyam, if you observe that precept, ladies and gentlemen, whenever you have the need to engage in sensuality, the only thing that you're supposed to do is to contemplate on the truth that I have just explained to you. The Noble Eightfold Path, sammaditti and then sammasankappa. That is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to contemplate on the truth that we just discussed. But if you have only observed the third precept, not the eight precepts, then you don't need to do any of that. Then what can you do? You feel like you want to have a bit of cake? You have it. And enjoy it. All the while thinking to yourself that that enjoyment comes to you from the cake. You don't like to be fooled, do you? Who here likes to be fooled? Likes to be taken for a fool? Have you not heard yourself telling others, "Hey, don't you try to take me for a fool. I know what I'm doing. Don't you try to take me for a fool." Have you not heard yourself saying that to other people? Ah, really? It's okay for someone else. It's not okay for someone else to fool you. But when you fool yourself, that's fair game, is it? Just imagine if you had to live a lay life and I asked you, or I required you to observe the eight precepts, you would find that incredibly difficult. Just think about it. To live in a lay life, actually not to live in a lay life, but to want to live a lay life. Now, if someone puts a piece of cake in front of you and you had to eat it, it's fine because your mind is not desiring it. Because this is all to do with the mind and your thoughts. If you're only eating it because you're required to eat it or your body needs it, fine with that. But I'm talking about, just imagine, if I were to dictate to you that from here on, whenever your mind wishes to enjoy the five modes of sensuality, you must not do that. I forbid you from doing that. Life would become hell for you. It would be very difficult to do. In other words, you cannot be buying half the things you buy at the supermarket. Because you will always have to ask yourself, am I buying this for nevadavaya, namadaya, නමණ්ඩනාය නවිභූෂණාය. Nevadavaya is not for sport. Namadaya is not for how do I put it politely? I'll explain to them to you another day. I'll explain the whole pratyaksha to you another day. Because I need to find the right words to get the point across to you. And I actually would like for you to do it as and when you can at home. At least a day when you know that you're going to be by yourself. If you have a day like that, you're just going to be by yourself. Right? Then you can actually observe that precept in its full essence and practice it at home. You know, folks, this is not really about reciting a precept or promising yourself to observe a precept. It's actually the practice that you get as you do that. That's what's important. As a high ordained monk, I have 227 precepts to live by. I welcome them. I wish we had more. I don't feel like I'm suffocated by all the rules that the Buddha laid down. I would feel that way if I didn't practice the Dhamma, or if my life was not committed to the Noble Path. In such instance, I would feel that all these rules just keep on suffocating, and it makes it very difficult for me to live my life. But if you are truly someone who has devoted your life to the Noble Path, in other words, to Nibbana, and that's all you want out of life, then the 227 rules are a walk in the park. So, what I wanted to point out to you was the fact that you choose to keep yourselves in a lay life for two reasons. One, duty. Responsibility, obligation. And for that, I have nothing to say. Because it's all part of what we do. I have duties and responsibilities, you have duties and responsibilities. When I decided to come into the Noble Path, there were duties and responsibilities I had to somehow bring to a conclusion. A graceful conclusion, a graceful end. If I hadn't done that, it would have been disaster, havoc. So I didn't do that. I did it gracefully. Because I was able to do that. But the second reason, think mostly about young people. That's why Guru Ramdas was always talking to young people. He's trying to talk sense into them. People who have lived a fair bit in their lives, you know, they're already embroiled and engaged in the duties, responsibilities and obligations, so much so that they find it very difficult to come out of that. But particularly when you're young, just take yourself back a few years, a good 10, 15 years, when you had very few responsibilities. Your parents were there for you. All you had to do was educate yourself. At that point, you were not bound to anyone. You had no children to look after, no spouse to look after, and so on. But even then, you did not choose the noble life because there was still one other reason why you wanted to remain in a lay life, and that was kame chara. So you can engage in sensuality. It was not because you wanted to kill. You could almost go without observing the first precepts because you don't kill, do you? You're harmless people. You could go away. You could do away with observing the first precept. And even the second precept, you don't steal. When you want something out of your own hard work and labor, you go and obtain it. It would be an insult, actually, to get you to observe the second precept and say, hey, don't steal. Swami knows, I've not even considered theft ever in my life. That is so beneath me, I would never do something like that. Yes. But when you come to the third precept, now we hit a bit of a hurdle. Fortunately, it's kamesu micchachara verma. Thank you. Just imagine if it were kamesu veramani. Here, karma is not about the fifth. You know, it's not the physical act of engaging in sensuality, ladies and gentlemen. Don't think that it's so. Don't think that it's so narrow. It's very broad. Anytime and every time you use your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and your body to enjoy any kind of sensuality, that includes listening to music and enjoying it. In other words, listening to music for enjoyment, not listening to music because you have to. Now, if you played a video here, I would also have to listen to it, but I don't listen to it to enjoy it. Because I don't find enjoyment in music. It is because of my understanding of the Dhamma that enjoyment does not come in music. That's the deal. So whenever you believe that enjoyment comes in the forms that are there out there, now you have to indulge yourself, engage yourself in those acts of sensuality. And whenever you do that, what is the punishment you give yourselves? Sansara. Sansara. Sansara is a punishment. That's why in the world, in this world system that we live in, if someone asks me this question today, Swaminathan sir, do you think that in the way that the world is constructed, there has to be a God who's created everything, and then there has to be the devil who punishes people for their wrongdoing? If someone asks me, is that necessary? My answer is, no, that's not necessary. It's not essential, because the mind does both of these perfectly well on its own. Your mind created you and everything around you. What about punishment? For the sins that you commit, your mind does that itself. When you're angry, remember, you're not punished for your anger, you're punished by your anger. Anger is the punishment. And the best you can do is try and contain that. It doesn't hurt the other person, but it hurts you still. When you're angry, who does it hurt first? Because we are civilized, we have to try and contain ourselves and not shout and scream and yell at others, right? But it's still hurting you within, is it not? When you feel jealousy, even if you cannot stoop down to a level to actually say something out to someone to hurt them, it still hurts you within yourself. When you feel fear, when you feel grievance and grief, when you feel sorrow, see, these are all punishments the mind gives itself. So now why do you need someone else to punish you? So where are the gods and where are the demons? All within you. So that's why I say, you know, cast away the demons and embrace the gods. You can do that all by yourself, ladies and gentlemen. That is why I love the Buddha's teachings. Because in the Buddha's teachings I have found empowerment. In the Buddha's teachings I have found that I am the master and I am the slave, both in one. I no longer have to be subservient to anyone, because there's no one to be subservient to. Besides the doings of my own mind, God is within you, the demon is within you, the angels are within you, and the devils are within you. Find them. Right. We're going to have to do something a little bit different today, as I'm going to have to leave now. I have somewhere else I must be in a couple of hours' time. But don't let his youthful appearance fool you. There's a reason why I have chosen him to be with me right from when we started to this day. Everything has a reason. Nothing happens per chance. There are no random things in the universe. Everything is driven by cause and effect. Randomness is just our way of trying to explain things we don't understand. So my choice of companion is not random. It is well thought out. Every other Anagarika who became a monk at Rajagiri, you heard from. But there was one monk who was always a monk. Your children have heard from him, but you haven't. I do fear that after he comes and speaks to you, you might have me go and talk to the children and have him do this sermon. I can't shake that fear. But if that is how the universe wants it, then that is how the universe will have it. So, please allow me to invite the most venerable Karagala Sudassi Thero, who was recently high ordained as well. So after having completed his practice as a Samanera for many good years, I've asked him to come and share a little bit of his story with you, a story that you never got to hear. He may be young, but that age is just a number. That's something you tell yourselves all the time, right? Even in this regard, I remind you, age is just a number. There are four things that the Buddha has said, never undermine. Number one, a royal prince. Never undermine a royal prince, because if you try and be funny with him, because his father is the king. Number two, a baby snake. Because it might be that it's just a little baby snake, but it's just as venomous. It's just as poisonous. The size of the serpent does not determine how poisonous it is. So you must not undermine that. Number three, a small fire. Don't underestimate a small fire. Because a small fire now can burn a whole house down. And number four, a young monk. Don't underestimate a young monk. Because age is just a number. You cannot tell someone's understanding and comprehension of the Dhamma by looking at them from the outside. People are books if you know how to read them. So without further ado then, I'm going to leave you in the very capable hands of the Venerable Monk, who will take on this sermon until you finish for today. You may have brought Pindapatha alms, which you can offer, as you always have done, to the Swami Nuhanse and the Anagarikas who will be there today. Unfortunately, I will not be here to receive your Pindapatha, but I rejoice in it nonetheless. So then, if I may, I'm going to take my leave. And please, could you all be upstanding to receive the Venerable Swami Nuhanse onto the stage to continue the sermon from here on. Theron san.
Theron san, eh? I think I'm a bit short for this chair. There are a lot of you. Unlike the children's sermon. Okay, so it is a great opportunity that I got to speak to my Dharmista Rajagirian parents here at the Rajagirian sermon. So I hope you all are doing well. So I was asked to share my life story, which I think you will find interesting and maybe inspiring as well. Okay. So I was born to my mother and father, of course. And in my family, there are two members, excluding my mother and father. I have my sister as well. She's currently in Peradeniya University. And so both of my parents are doctors. So one is a consultant, the other one is a dental surgeon. He used to be, but now he's a monk. The one before the last ordination ceremony, he got ordained. As typical Sri Lankan relatives and friends of my parents and all of them, just like a normal person, normal people would ask me, as a child of two doctors, what would you ask? If you meet someone who's a child of two doctors, what would you ask? The typical question that everyone asks, what is that question? Puta, who do you want to be when you grow up? You want to be a doctor, don't you? That is a typical question that every single person who I have met in my life I have asked. And the answer to that, they would ask me, Puta, your mother is a doctor, your father is a doctor, you're also going to be a doctor, right? And I said, no. But I wanted to be a pilot in my life. But what the destiny has led me is something different. Ultimately, I had to become a doctor, which is a mental doctor. A mental doctor who can help people, who can help anyone. Thanks to my teachers, I have become a mental doctor today. Not a psychologist, although I have studied the psychology a bit, but not a psychologist, but a mental doctor who can help people to get rid of their problems in life. I think that is one of the most important things that I have achieved in my life today. So now I think I've been a monk for 6 years. This is the sixth year. And I've been in the monastery for 6 years. So you haven't heard from me, although you have heard from the other monks, other Venerable Swami Nahanses. So that was my life. So basically, I lived like that, and half of my school life was spent abroad. Half of it was spent abroad, half of it was spent in Sri Lanka, and from the half that was spent abroad, it was spent in two different countries as well. So one was Seychelles, if you have heard it, and the other is the UK. So while we were in the UK, we got to know that Guru Hamdru had been there, the Deshikan Mahanse, had been there, but we didn't know. But we came to Sri Lanka because of one single person who I still transfer merits every single day. Who do you think that person is? My beloved sister. She wanted to do O-levels in Sri Lanka. I was trying to convince her every single day that, no, you can do O-levels here, you can do the GCSE in the UK, and we can live in the UK. But now I understand why has destiny led her to want to do O-levels in Sri Lanka. If we didn't come back to Sri Lanka when she made that decision, then we would still be in the UK. And we wouldn't have met, of course. You and I have never met if I was still in the UK. But thanks to my sister, I live a life today with my mind being a lot free than it used to be. Because I ordained at the age of 15, but that was a decision that was made, well thought out. Because I thought to myself, am I really going to choose this path? Should I? Should I not? Should I? Should I not? And I asked my parents. Of course, they liked it because they were listening to the Dhamma as well. Then I chose that path because I had heard a phrase that says that you have to jump in the river to learn to swim. First jump and then learn. That was my motivation. So I knew that this path was right, this path was correct, and also there's something else I knew. I'll tell you later what that is. So I got to know that you have to jump in the river to swim. To learn to swim, you have to first jump in the river. Otherwise, you'd be learning the theory, but you'd actually don't know. You wouldn't know what is the real method of swimming. How to actually swim. Practically do that. There would be a problem with that. So therefore, I jumped in the river. So just like Venerable Swami Nansi said, just before he left, there are many things that you can't do, which at the start, it was really hard. Trust me. It was really hard. But today, if you ask me, is your life hard, Swami Nansi, as a monk? Is your life hard, Swami Nansi? What do you think my answer would be? Not at all. But was your life hard? Yes, it was. But because my life was hard, I gained help from my teachers, from the Venerable Swami Nansi, from the Guru Swami Nansi, and all the other teachers at the monastery. I gained help from them. And the help that I received helped me relieve out of the problems that I had in my mind. And just like the Venerable Swami Nansi said, no offense, how many things do you need at home versus how many things do you want at home? But today, the only things that I have is my alms bowl and 2 robes for my name. And I am happy with that. I am simply happy with that. My teachers have helped me a lot to live a simple life like that. I want all of you to achieve that as well. I want all of you to come there as well. It is not hard, but it is hard at the beginning. Just think about jumping into the river without knowing how to swim. But eventually you learn how to. Eventually you learn how to swim if you jump into the river. But for that, you need to jump. But you can stay on the bank and then think like, there are waves on the river as well. You'll start seeing waves on the river. And then you'll think that it's hard to jump. But only if you jump, you'll understand that you have the potential to swim. So all of you are meritorious people. That's why you get to listen to these sermons. That's why you get to listen to Venerable Swami Nansi's sermons. That's why you have come across Guru Handru. That's why you have come across Venerable Amada Sam Swami Nansi in your life, just like I have. Because you all are very meritorious people. And you do merits all the time. Every single time I see you guys, every single time I see you all, you do merits. You do an immense amount of merits. You lay the powder, you arrange this place. I mean, just think about it. There is a Swami Nansi at our monastery. So he's responsible of doing all the decorations that you see at the monastery. So one day I met him and he told me that it is that decoration that he did with the intention of giving happiness to people or giving pleasantness to the mind while people are listening to the Dhamma. It is that that with that intention when you do decoration that has helped him to realize a lot of Dhamma today. So with all of you doing such decorations, with all of you doing such arrangements, with all of you arranging flowers like this, I think you can achieve this. I think you can attain Nibbana. You have the potential. But first, you have to realize it. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to realize it. There's a nice stanza that is always uttered by the Buddha in the first 20 years. And the first line of that is, Kanti paramantapotitikka. What that means is, you have to put your patience first. Put your patience first and then practice the path to achieve fruits. Put your patience in front of you. If you put your patience in front of you, then everything that comes towards you, you put a hold. You put a hold and then think about it. But otherwise, if you try to think about that problem, being inside that problem, then it is hard to get out of it. But if you put a hold and then wait a second and then think about that problem, then you'll be able to apply what you know today to that problem. So ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to actually continue from where the Venerable Swami Nansi stopped. So this is Bob and John. Let's take a typical scenario where Bob is arguing with John. So Bob is blaming John for something that John had done, right? This happens at home, right? So Bob is blaming John for something that John had done wrong. We tend to see this as Bob blaming John, right? Bob is angry, John gets angry. What do you think John's reaction is now? To blame back. This is what we see. But there is something that happens behind the scenes. There is something that happens behind the scenes which we fail to realize. Bob blames John, John blames Bob. But this is the box. Can you hear me? This is the box that a typical person sees. But there is something that happens behind the scenes, which is, so we have, the Venerable Swami Nansi has talked about the Vipaka strands and all that, right? So Bob has a Vipaka strand, or the karmic strand. And John has a karmic strand as well. When Bob is blaming John, what is happening to John? John is hearing. He's hearing a sound. That is what you call a blame, right? Where is that sound coming from? Is it coming from Bob? As thanks to physics, we know that sound is not coming from Bob. So that sound John creates in his mind. So I'll talk in 2D sense and then go into the 3D. So I'll use people right now, right? So John creates that sound in his mind, and that sound is due to his vipaka. That vipaka comes down as a fruit, and it comes into fruition, and John hears a sound, which he hears as a blame. To that, what is John's reaction? To blame back. When John is blaming back, what is happening to Bob? It creates an environment for this vipaka to come into fruition. When Bob is blaming, it creates an environment for this vipaka to come into fruition. When John is blaming, it creates an environment for this vipaka to come into fruition. So, whose vipaka has come into fruition at the end? For Bob, has anything come from John? For John, has anything come from Bob? But Bob got angry and blamed John. John got angry and blamed Bob. That is what we see. But what actually happened behind the scene is that Bob is spending his own vipaka in his life. John is spending his own vipaka in his life. And these two are two discrete events. We fail to realize that because of jati. Because jati is happening in our mind, therefore we create a whole story using all the information that comes in. We create a whole story using the vipaka. But ultimately, we have lived a life alone. We have lived with our own vipaka. We have lived with only our vipaka strand. I haven't seen you, you haven't seen me. I have never seen you. I have only seen my vipaka. You have never seen me. You have only seen your vipaka. Just think about it. If you don't have the vipaka to hear right now, you won't hear any single word that I will be saying. Because this creates an environment for you to hear a sound, your vipaka comes into fruition right now. If you have the vipaka right now to listen to a music, then with every single word that I'm saying of the Dhamma, you'd hear music. That is why, just think about it. That is why, whatever I explain, you understand the way you understand it. If you ask every single person at the end of the sermon, I give you a sheet of paper and then tell you to write down the highlights of the sermon. Do you think all of those highlights would be the same? But if it came from me, then every highlight should be the same, shouldn't it? But that is not the case. So you would understand the sermon in the way you would understand. Because that is also again your vipaka. According to the merits you have done, ladies and gentlemen, your vipaka will be drawn according to an environment. That is how every single thing in this world works. So therefore, an environment is created and therefore vipaka is drawn to that environment. Vipaka comes into fruition according to an environment. That is how every single thing works in this world. That is why the Venerable Swaminathan said, you create your own angels. You create your own devils. You punish yourself. Why? Because it is just the mind with vipaka. A mind creates with being created with vipaka, that's all there. Every single time vipaka comes into fruition, that's why you get to know about this world. And there are six ways of that happening. That is through your eyes, ears, smell, which is nose, and tongue, and your skin, and your mind. So these are the six ways that vipaka comes into fruition. These are the six ways that you get to know about the world. But you don't get to know about the world, do you? You get to know about your world. You get to know about the world that is created within you. You get to know about your personal world. In that personal world, you have me. In that personal world, you have a Swaminathan preaching to you right now. If this is not the environment for that vipaka to be drawn, then you wouldn't have that in your world right now. Let's say that you worked last night till the morning and you came to the sermon. Now, do you think that there is an environment for those vipaka to be drawn? No. Therefore, you would doze off. You would fall asleep. Because you were tired and therefore now your body stops supporting you. Therefore, now there is no environment for the vipaka to be drawn. You would always need an environment for vipaka to be drawn. And that is all that happens in this world. That's why I told you that you have never seen me. I have never seen you. Whatever you're seeing right now, you call it the Swaminathan. Whatever I'm seeing right now, I call it the Rajagirians. So that's why sometimes in Guru Ram's sermons, he asks that, can you see the pig over here? Can you see it? You can't, because you don't have that vipaka. Does that mean that there isn't pig here? You can't say that, can you? Because just because the pig is not in your world, doesn't mean that it is not in the world. That is why there are many things that we might not see today, but it doesn't mean that they don't exist. So therefore, if you take this simple scenario that happens in everyday life, this is applied anicca. So you learn pure anicca and applied anicca, just like pure maths and applied maths. So when you learn pure anicca from the sermons, you have to apply it into your practical life, which is your lab of life, and then understand it through applied. That's why you have pure maths and applied maths, right? Because applied maths, you apply it into real world scenarios. But there is a little bit of pure maths you apply into real life. Agreed? So just like that, you have pure anicca as well as applied anicca. So there is a way of practicing the Dhamma. You can think about the Dhamma to the depth, to the end. You can think about that. Because even the Supreme Buddha had said that either you can take a bucket and go to the ocean and take a shower from the while staying on the beach, right? You can take a shower on the shallow beach, right? Shallow sea. Or you can take a huge ship and then go to the depths of the ocean, or a submarine, and go to the depths of the ocean and take a shower there as well. But either way, you take a shower and cleanse yourself. So you can think about the Dhamma, but thinking about the Dhamma and applying Anicca, which is practicing the path, are two different things, ladies and gentlemen. So this is applied Anicca. How this becomes Anicca is because you start seeing that this is not a fixed entity and this is not a fixed story that's happening. It is Vipaka coming into fruition and creating a mind. And therefore, you get rid of that fixed sense while thinking about this. That creation of the mind, you can call it Sankara, right? Which is a creation, which is a formation of the mind. Vipaka coming into fruition and formation of a mind. That's when the Lord Buddha says, Sabbe Sankara Anicchati. Yada panyaya passati atha nibbindite dukke esa maggo visuddhiya. Sabbe sankara anicchati. Vipaka coming into fruition and creating a mind that itself explains anicca. Vipaka coming into fruition and manifesting a mind that itself explains anicca. So ladies and gentlemen, I want you to take this applied part and apply it to your day-to-day life. Because this is not something weird, right? This happens every day, doesn't it? So I want you all to take this and apply this into your life and apply Anicca, which will help you to realize the truth. Little by little, every single step you take counts. Every single step you take towards your destination counts. That's why when they say success is a journey, but not a destination, right? But here, it is different. Here, there is a destination. Isn't that so? Although success is a journey, not a destination, here there is a destination. There is a goal. There is a place that you can reach to, and which is called Nibbana. So here, success is a destination which you can reach to and which you can keep going towards every single time. Every single mind you can reach, you can keep reaching success. And which is the destination in this case. So I want you all to apply this into your practical lives and then check whether this is right or wrong. This is very simply explained. Anicca. So I wouldn't go to the depths of it because the Venerable Swaminas will go to that. But I'd like to leave you with this. I think this would be a very valuable lesson. This is something that I have learned in my life as well. Because if you ask me to what I practice, I would tell you a very, very small thing. But if you ask anyone, any of our Swaminansas at the monastery, to what they understand, they would start preaching you for hours. But what they practice is something very small. Even a tactic that the Venerable Swaminansa uses is that the best thing is to have spiritual postures. Do you know what they are? Spiritual postures are cues that reminds you to go into the path, to go into the track back again, just like your pirith thread. You can have that as a spiritual posture. Every time you see your pirith thread, it can remind you, you can make it a cue to put you back on the track, to put you back onto the path, which reminds you to practice the path. When you see the pirith thread, oh, I have to practice the path. Every time you see your watch, you can make it a cue to practice the path. So every single time you see the watch, you go like, I have to practice the path. But not just that, We can go further and put different karmasthan into them. The things that you take out of sermons, so for example, just like sabbe sankara anicchati, maybe you put that into a person that you see in your day-to-day life. Maybe you put that into your Buddha or Dua, or your husband or your wife. And you look, when you look at them, every single time you meet them in front of you, it will remind you, sabbe sankara anicchati. That is enough for you to go on the track after that. It's just that you need a cue somehow to go or fall into the track back again when you go out of the track. So I think that will help you to practice the path as well. And I would like to leave you there. But before I conclude, I'll tell you a story. One day, there was a Maharatan Mahanse, Maharat Theraniya, called Sila Maharat Theraniya. And this Maharat Theraniya, which is a nun, she goes on alms round in the villages, and then she comes back to her forest where she lives alone. Right? Just think about it. She lives alone in a forest. Ladies in the house, can you? So this Maharat Theraniya lives in the forest alone. While she was living in the forest alone, she comes back from Pindapatha, the alms round, and then the Mara comes up to her thinking that I should scare her. Now, as you know, can a Maharatan Mahansi be scared? Of course not. But the Mara approaches her thinking that I can scare her. I'll scare her and I'll freak her out. And thinking that, the Mara comes up to her and then tells her a stanza. And that stanza is Kenayam pakato satto kuan sattasya karako kuan satto samuppanno kuan satto niruccati. The Mara asks, what is the reason? Or who do you call this sattva or this being? What is the reason for this being? How does this being arise and how does this being pass away? The Mara asks this from this venerable Maharat Theraniya. And then to this the venerable Maharat Theraniya replies, Kinnu sattva si pachesi Mara ditting gatang yute Suddha sankara punjoyan naida sattva palabhati. It's just like a slap on Mara's face. Why? Because she says that kinnu sattva si pachesi, how can you talk about a sattva? Itself is a Mara ditti, which is a Mara view, a view of the Mara. It is your own false view. She says that to the Mara. She tells the Mara that it is your own false view. It is a Mara ditti. It is a wrong view. It is the wrong view that makes you think that there are sattvas that exist in this world. So it is your own fault that you feel like that. Suddha sankara punjoyang naida sattva palabhati. There's only a collection of sankara, which is formations, which is building up. That is all that's there. Suddha sankara punjoyam naida sattva palabhati. Therefore, you can't talk about a sattva. You can't talk about a being. You can't talk about a fixed entity. You can't talk about a living being. Because there's only suddha sankara. Because there's only sankara. There's only formations. That is all there. Now, I have a small question to ask. Isn't that what all of your destiny should be? Ladies in the house, my mothers at Rajagiriya, isn't that where you want to go to? Isn't that the mindset that you want to achieve? And also my father's in Rajagiriya. Isn't that what your destiny should be? So I invite you all to understand the Dhamma more and practice the path and fulfill your destiny. Achieve what you ought to achieve. So thank you very much for listening. And we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon for today. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have acquired throughout the day by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, making the decorations and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude let us transfer this merit to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merit to all the members of the Mahasangha present to all the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merit to our teacher, Guru Swami Nohanse, and all the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing their sermons with others or inviting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, and to those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, and to those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this merit to our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmanas, priests and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Samadhi Sasane. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have preceded us, to all who have been our friends, families, and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost their lives in war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired throughout the day. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I and everyone who has helped make these programs a success become an Arhat Mahanse or an Arhat Maini Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen mitetnva dvesha ginnen mitetnva mohaginnan midatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva mama dasya loka siyalu satmayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva raga kini niveva dvesha kini niveva moha kini niveva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva තුන්වන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයන් නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.